Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my radio listeners. You are getting it right with Dr. Bowles. I am so excited to be with you this afternoon. If you've been following over the last few weeks, you know that I have been talking about social justice in the United States, and we're all the way up to part three. I actually revised a little bit of what was posted on this last week, so if you're able to tune in and read along with me, you'll see that the concepts that we're talking about have to do with what is social justice. That was the definition, and we talked about that in part one. Part two, we talked about how clearly are we able to implement social justice. Is it some just a good idea, but really can't be a hands-on? Today, I would like to share with my guest, Ms. Cassandra Bell Gash, who's been with me over the last two parts for social justice discussion. We want to talk a little bit more about social justice, but I want a different slant. The slant that I have in mind is knowledge has a responsibility that's inherent with it. And in trying to explain what I meant by that, sometimes, and I found this to be true in my personal and my family life, you can find out information that you cannot share if you mean to do no harm. And I often find myself wondering, are there aspects of social justice that if it were discussed openly, that it could not cause more inflammation, more anger, and volatility than what might have been anticipated when the person who uncovered the information tried to share? And on that note, I'm going to say welcome, Cassandra. How are you today?
Doing well, thanks, Dr. Bowles.
Okay, well, with that lead-in, we had talked briefly earlier on social justice, and my real concern at this point particularly, and I'm going to throw this in, October 10th, as you may know, is when the march is on Washington, D.C. It's commemorating the anniversary of the Million Man March, and there's been all kinds of information connected with it. Some say it's time for the black man to take the power. Others are hoping to have a very good congenial interaction. But in the climate here in the United States, with all of the social injustice that has started to been pointed out, particularly with the, well, I don't even know the right word, killing, assassination, murdering of young black men particularly, but of course there have been a number of young women who have died after being arrested. So what I would like to talk about with you today is the responsibility those of us who may feel we have a good understanding of social justice, what is our responsibility to the masses and even to ourselves in the context of what we feel we know? Silence. Was that a mouthful?
Oh, you were asking?
I was all in.
I was waiting for you to continue.
Well, I know
that
we
our
have
responsibility.
A responsibility.
You know, I always enjoy your leads, and it just prompts thoughts, and I be taking down notes as you're talking. So excuse me, but you know, I was writing actually down that the individual has to first be receptive, and independent accountability. You know, you must first know what it is that you're missing, what it is that you desire before you can put the responsibility off on someone else. You have to first know what you're going after, or if you don't know what you're going after, at least have some kind of idea about what you're missing. You know, I believe in problem solving, and if you can't identify the problem for your own respective lives, then it's kind of challenging and hard to anticipate that someone else know exactly what
now,
you want. So what we talked about earlier about knowledge, having a responsibility with it, I believe in first individual accountability and then being able to have accessibility to resources.
You know, it's interesting, and I almost interrupted, so I'm glad I was able to hold myself back. You have, in my opinion, quite literally uncovered in my mind the very gist of how hard it is to help those who are in need of help, because there is a sense of helplessness that I have found when I work with, I'll just say, low socioeconomic persons or those who are confined to a very small world, whether the confinement is self-imposed or not. What do I mean by that? They don't work outside of the home, or if they do, it's in a very menial task, that they don't read newspapers, they don't follow any kind of a subscription to a magazine. They get their entire entertainment by television. The shows they select to watch has very little content of learning in it. Now, if I come upon someone who, from what I see, need my help, and your comment says they must first have an idea of what it is they intend to benefit from my services, and I think by that one comment you have explained to many who may have never been in the counseling or the helping field, such as healthcare, why so many people get burnt out. And why a number of us choose other areas to expend our energy. Often, and I say too often, the very persons you're trying to help give you no help to help them. Does that make
exactly.
sense? What I just said?
And just give a small, just give a small example. Being a wife and a mother, I may come home and say, "What do you want for dinner?" I don't know. Okay. What do you think you have a taste for? I don't know. Can you tell me what you don't want? You know, and that's just a small example of how hard it is for someone to help you or to provide for you that substance, that thing that you need, when you can't even give them a lead.
Well,
you know.
I think, and I didn't listen to the actual debates, but I've seen some of the, what you may say, the backflash of the comments that were made. You know, the Republicans, six or eight of them, had a debate recently. The whole problem, and I'm going to give it back to you, those who want to lead the United States, let's say the presidency, or even here in Louisiana, those who want to be the governor of the state, if the very person who's intending to be the provider, that's the governor or the United States president, do not even understand the persons they're trying to provide to, that's problem number one, and secondarily, the people that they're hoping to provide for don't give them information in such a way they understand it of what it is they need to be provided for. And I think that's a major issue. I don't know if anyone's
ever discussed
it. The issue,
in my opinion, is that of experience. If you've never experienced rejection, poverty, if you never experienced having your voice beaten out of you, if you've never experienced being told that you don't have a voice, then you won't understand what people need. The only way you understand what an individual needs is to have some type of point of reference, whether it's a direct experience or an indirect experience, something that kind of, as they say, for lack of a better word, that has hit you close to home, close to your heart. I'm not impacted by things far and removed from me. I'm impacted by the things within my home, within my neighborhood, within my community, within my state, within my city, within my state. So everything that we experience it first intimately, whether it's through our development of interpersonal relationships with our parents or caregivers, into that of our peers, adolescents, teenage years, into that of our intimate relationships, our significant others. And so that's the progression of how we learn. And how we experience those things entails and transforms how we experience other things on the outside of us.
And there's another part of it, and I was waiting patiently to see if you're going to hit upon it. I think I may have shared it with you. I was once working with Urban League, and for those of you too young to understand, that happened to be what HUD evolved into. But it was a time when there were programs focused on trying to even the playing field, as they would say, level the playing field. And I was acting as a tutor in an evening class, and I just was feeling compassionate that There were those who had grown up in a home of alcoholics, or they had been in the ghetto all of their life, and some had had just atrocities in their childhood. And my thinking is, okay, I'm going to help them get their GED, and I was just gung-ho and full of energy and available and giving things up, sacrificing and parking my car and catching a bus and walking into neighborhoods people would tell me I shouldn't go. And this one fellow, after I learned his story, I felt like he was such a hero type, such a courageous fellow. But the bottom line is he was selling crack cocaine to support his mother and two of his sisters and blah, blah, blah. But I saw him as this young man struggling to do the best for his family. And in trying to get him qualified for GED, there was something he was very weak on, and I had sacrificed to be present in this classroom after hours, 8:30 or 9 o'clock, and it was in a neighborhood where they advocated us doing this. And the young man came by, and he kind of reprimanded me. He said to me, what are you doing here? You know you shouldn't be here by yourself. And he was probably a 19-year-old or so, and I wasn't much older. And I said to him, oh, I'm waiting for you because you need to do this, this, and this, and this, and I'm here, and blah, blah. And he looked at me, and he says, did you ever think that when you're trying to help somebody, they have to want it? And I was just, he could have hit me across the head with his fist. I was so shocked that the concept that he had any action required. All he had to be is present, and I was going to teach him, I was going to show him, I was going to help him. But he let me know that there has to be a willingness on the part of the person to be helped, to be helped. And I just assumed that if you needed help and I saw the need, that you'd want it. He was telling me as clear as anyone has ever in my entire life, and this has to be, oh my goodness, 30 years ago, that he was clearly saying to me, your effort doesn't match my desire for it. And I was like, oh, so you mean I'm here putting myself at risk, harm's way, thinking that I'm doing something for, in my mind, this ideal hero, and he comes in and reprimands me. What are you doing here? It's not safe for you to be here by yourself. Why are you here? And I'm saying, oh, I want to do this for you. And this, and he says, don't you know I have to want it? And I took a couple of deep breaths and felt like crying. And essentially he said, I'll walk you to the bus. But what he did, he caught the bus with me. So his concern for my safety was sufficient for him to literally escort me to my parked car, which required a bus ride to get to. And he wanted me to know clearly that the enthusiasm I was showing in trying to help him was not his enthusiasm for wanting to learn it.
And it goes back to what I said about experience, yes. Because knowledge has responsibility with it. His knowledge of how unsafe it was for you to be in that environment was based on his experiences. So for him, that was more important than what you were trying to teach him. Your knowledge was, if you allow me to assist you, then you can be responsible, have delegated authority, have jurisdiction over something more than the hustle that you're currently in. And it's all about perspective. And it all is truly relevant.
You've just described, I think, the dilemma of these United States of America, that those in power, those making the decisions, do not have the perspective to either accept, nor do they desire to, the perspective of the Black American. If you look at the incarceration in this United States, it reflects the intolerance of the powerful people to the very Black man. I mean, how can we be 14% of the population and over 50% of the incarcerated? It's clear. I mean, you don't even have to be a social scientist or a counselor to look at that and say something's wrong here. You know, you punish what you don't approve of, or you detain what you can't grasp, or you segregate what you don't want to intermingle. So what we're really talking about in a less direct manner, we're giving examples, which I think is important, is you have to have that desire to learn whatever that perspective of that other person. Thank goodness I was willing to listen, and I got out of that neighborhood, and I don't even know if he finished the program that I was teaching, but my focus was on what I knew, And that blinded me to what could have cost me my life. And if we reflect now to what's going on politically, look at people running for president who despises Mexicans or despises women. I mean, the whole concept of this person making it into the White House and being in a position of power, being in a position of government, should make everyone shiver. Because that person, in my opinion, has no desire to see a perspective other than his own.
And I believe anyone that promotes that type of division, anyone that promotes those types of thoughts and rationale for people should not even be in a position of leadership, you know.
Well, but in America, it's the money. I mean, we're talking about Donald Trump. I don't have to tiptoe around. He has enough money to campaign. He has enough money to buy TV time. He has enough money to put up billboards. So his voice is heard, not because what he's saying makes sense or what he's saying is even the voice of a majority, but it's yet being heard. So part of when we talk about justice, how does capitalism trump justice? But it always seems to.
Well,
is that,
you know, we all have a right to vote. You know, we all have a right to vote. We have a right to voice our opinions, to get them out there. That's kind of what you're doing, or not kind of, that is what you're doing right now. And we, the people of these United States, irrespective of what your race is, have a personal responsibility to be informed and make decisions, not just what's going to promote our lives, but the lives of our children and those who are coming behind us. Now, if we don't take advantage of those opportunities and we find ourselves in a predicament where we are moving light years backwards, you know, and dealing with issues that folks dealt with in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and so forth, and well beyond that, then I think that's our fault. We understand that there are those who don't believe in the value of the black individual. We understand there are those who don't believe in the value of women in the workplace. We understand those who don't believe in the value of those with gender identity issues. We believe that there are people who don't believe that anybody who is different has any rights. So these individuals, if these respective groups don't speak out for themselves, then what they receive, unfortunately, is because they were remiss and removed from the issues at hand. Now, I believe in personal accountability, but I also believe that legislatively there should be a place where these things should be easily accessible. And I don't know how to make that happen, but I believe that that should exist. You know, that's beyond that's beyond my power, but I definitely believe that that should exist.
Well, the reason I'm laughing is because this concept of personal accountability is something near and dear to my heart. I know you're aware that since the Voting Act has to be renewed every 20 years, because when the Voting Act was put in place, it was not an amendment to the Constitution. So the black American got an act, and it has to be voted in every 20 years. And I don't know if you were aware of what an uproar it caused in the late 2014, where they did not want to vote it back in, saying it was no longer necessary. And as soon as that debate was put forth, they began to put restrictions on voters' registration, that if you did not have a photo ID, you could not come and register and vote in the states of Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, the very same states who had the Jim Crow laws that prevent black Americans from voting. So personal accountability is certainly wonderful if they have equal accessibility. And that comes back to my comment about capitalism, that money speaks, that if I can pay $100 a month to put a billboard up to proselytize something that I believe, then I have a greater voice than someone who can scarcely pay enough money to live in a project or a Section 8 housing. So the equality here isn't just personal accountability, but it's accessibility. And that gets us right back to social justice. What right does an individual have as a citizen to the same justice as someone who has deep pockets? Is being poor a sufficient reason for me not to get good health care? Is being poor a sufficient reason that I don't have good housing, or my child is sick, or I cannot get sufficient care for my aging parents? Those are the social justice questions.
Yeah, and so the biggest question in looking at problem solving is, why are you poor? You know, then what are your views about money? What are your views and issues about marketing oneself?
Well, I can answer that quickly.
Are there opportunities available that one did not take advantage of?
Less than 1% of the United States are wealthy. The people who are in power and very wealthy, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and take my view to the hilt, our Goldwaters and Kennedys and Rothschilds and those who are now in New York City, Hamptons, and some of the high areas in California, many of them earned their money through contraband. That in the 1920s, the bootleggers and the claim jumpers and the gold, what happened if you trace history, and this is why I like studying history, those who got their monies before 1917 never paid taxes on it. The people who owned slaves in the southern states didn't pay their workers. Keep in mind, that's what slavery was. If you had 200 slaves who picked cotton and you didn't pay them anything and you sold that cotton, that's pure profit. So those who rose to power and greatness financially did it on the backs of those who they had and somehow incarcerated or somehow, enslaved. So once they accrued their funds, they shut the door. So if I can't own slaves now and I can't plant a 200-acre cotton farm and reap the benefits, I can't have a sugarcane plantation and pay workers nothing and reap the benefits of that sugar meal. I can't have a copper mine and take the incarcerated, make them work in the copper mines until they drop and get no prosecution because of that behavior. So those who now in the United States who own all the money didn't get it on the same methods that they tell us we should try. They didn't write business plans. They didn't take loans by banks. They didn't climb the ladder. They killed somebody. They shot somebody. They kidnapped somebody. They didn't pay somebody. But no one is questioning the route by which their wealth was accrued. And when we challenge it, they say, oh, let the bygones be bygones. When we talk about reformation, what we're really saying is, how do you work with people for 400 years and pay them nothing, and then when they are released from bondage, take land and say, because of your color of your skin, you can't own property? I mean, even as horrendously bad that they treated Native Americans, they put them on reservations. Slaves didn't even get reservations. We just got turned out. We were just turned loose. No clothes, no shoes, no education, no land, no property, no identity. We were just, okay, you're free. And then turned around and arrested us by saying you're laundering. But we had nowhere to go. So no one talks about, no one addresses how those who are wealthy, and those who are now seemingly in this do loop, this endless cycle of social support, welfare support, Section 8 support. Why aren't we breaking out and being wealthy like them? Well, most of our young men who try go to jail. They sell crack cocaine or they sell marijuana the same way the bigwigs sold alcohol during prohibition. But our boys get life in prison, and their boys went to Harvard and Yale. So if we don't talk about history.
I believe a great way of knowing who you are and where you're headed is to have an understanding of where you've been. But in the last few minutes, I'm sitting here thinking about that is a challenging historical path to be a direct member of, and yet we have people like yourself and myself who, through experiences, good, bad, or indifferent, have been able to provide for our families, do a little something extra for our community, and what is it that we know that we can share to those who are poor, not just poor in money, but poor in spirit, who no longer have any motivation, who don't have a plan. Because there's something that you learned that has afforded you to be Dr. Bowles. And that information in the here and the now is what I see as important for those who are saying, okay, then tell me, how do I get out? Because I don't know anyone who has gotten out.
Well, I'm going to say, look how precarious my Dr. Bowles is. Look how precarious your certifications are. That I am no more able to reach back and pull someone up on solid ground because my ground is not solid. My degree is held in the hands of the university that I went to. My license is held in the hands of the board that holds that license. So part of the, I'm going to say the merry-go-round, is those of us who reach a certain platform within these United States have no foundation. I don't have anything that I can speak to that's absolute. I can say I'll speak on your behalf. I can give you a recommendation. But where I stand is always precarious because I'm a black female in the United States. I am a target. I have, and I think I shared this once, went to a meeting and was the guest speaker, sat at one of the front tables, but the people at my table never even considered that I could be the authority on the topics they were talking about in the table. And they even referred to their program a couple of times and addressed this Dr. Bowles is going to speak. And it wasn't until I got up on the stage and behind the podium that they could believe this is a black female. So even among them, in their midst, now I had some choices. I could have been aggressive and rude and a little arrogant and started answering the questions. They were just rallying between themselves, never addressing me, never asking who I was or if I knew anything. Or I could have done what I did, and that was just sit there and be silent and then do what I came to do. So I guess the bottom line is I don't think any of us have ever really made it. I don't think President Obama made it. He got to the White House. He got sworn in as a president, but look at the disrespect he got. Look at how derogatory they treated him. Look how the international field of people reacted to him. He got to the highest office in the United States, but his black face preceded the honor of what that position should have given him right off the bat.
Exactly.
So I don't know that having a degree or having a certification in these United States really mean anything if we don't own the premise by which we got that establishment. I mean, I can't own my medical license without the board of the medical board. I can't own my degree without the University of Pittsburgh. So I know that some years ago, 50, maybe even longer, 60 years ago, the whole concept of just like you can hear about synagogues and Jewish institutions and the Italian American Society, if a black man established something, there's a negative connotation to it. Even this movement where it says Black Lives Matter, there was someone got up and said, is that a hate group? I'm thinking, excuse me? The title didn't even suggest anything aggressive, but yet, you want to demonize any unification that the black American has ever seemed to present. So I don't really feel worthy, to be honest, to try to stand on a platform and say, here's what you have to do to get where I am, because I don't feel safe where I am. This is tenuous where I am.
The opposite word that you said was you don't feel worthy and you don't feel safe. And looking at individual accountability, if you don't have another voice to validate you, then it is also, in my opinion, individual responsibility to learn how to validate yourself, to understand your own self-value, your own self-worth.
I got to argue that. I have great self-validation and great self-value. My comment is for social justice properties, I can't assure anyone of anything because in America there is no assurance for the Black American. That's my position.
And the assurances that we need, unfortunately, are always limited. But what we have to do is continue to pursue understanding, pursue the knowledge, and see. We may not have everything that we want or feel that we need that exists for the change that we want to see in our life, but it's my opinion that whatever resources are available, we have a personal responsibility to take hold of them and use them in our practical day-to-day needs and experiences so that we bring about some change, and it starts somewhere. And so I'm just wanting to encourage people just to get moving.
Well, with that, I certainly agree, because the alternative means to give up and dig a hole and get in it. And with that, I have to say, take care, my listeners. And until next time, do take care. This is Dr. Velvel Bowles, Getting It Right. Bye now.
Goodbye.